call this meeting to order. Will you please rise for the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Becker? Ms. Gladyszewski?
Here.
Mr. Gregory?
Present.
Mr. Jones? Mr. Keel?
Here.
Mr. Nankervis?
Here.
Ms. Weldon?
Here.
Ms. White?
Here.
Mayor Kelch?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Were there anybody on the telephone?
The phone line is open for Ms. Becker and Mr. Jones to call in. And Mr. Jones said he may be late due to a meeting he's attending.
Okay, will you let me know if there's anybody on there so I don't neglect them? Special orders of business. We have a proclamation, USS O'Kane. And we have... Carl, you could tell, where are you? That. And Casey Christian. And I asked Carl to come up because Carl's been instrumental in getting this all organized. And he got how many more days before everything was taken care of?
It'll never all be taken care of. We'll move on to the next.
Why don't you read proclamation down there now, there?
Office of the Mayor, City and Borough of Juneau, Proclamation, USS O'Kane. Whereas the USS O'Kane is an Arleigh Burke destroyer homeported in Pearl Harbor, is conducting a port visit in Juneau from May 13th to May 18th, 2017. And whereas the USS O'Kane successfully participated in the U.S. Pacific Command Readiness Exercise Northern Edge with over 6,000 military and 180 Air Force, Army, Navy, and Marine aircraft. And whereas the community of the City and Borough of Juneau recognizes and is concerned for the safety and welfare of all seagoing vessels and their crew. And whereas the vocation of our U.S. Navy sailors and Marines are burdened with hazards and difficulties unknown to most of us, and whereas strength and courage are basic requirements for anyone who chooses to work on the high seas, battling the elements in order to protect this country and our Constitution, and whereas the USS O'Kane provided numerous community relation volunteer hours at the Juneau schools and working with Trail Mix to conduct trail maintenance, conducting commemoration service at the USS Juneau Memorial, and that the U.S. Navy Pacific Fleet Band participated in outreach at the schools and at the Juneau Jazz and Classics venue, and whereas the City and Borough of Juneau welcomes and sincerely appreciates the dedication of the USS O'Kane.
Now, therefore, I, Kendall D. Kelch, Mayor of the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, on behalf of the City and Borough Assembly, do hereby proclaim Monday, May 15, 2017, as USS O'Kane Day. And witness thereof, I have set my hand and caused the seal of the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, to be affixed this 15th day of May, 2017. Welcome.
On behalf of the USS O'Kane, we really want to thank the town of Juneau, the city of Juneau, for just their hospitality and being so welcoming to us. We've really enjoyed ourselves. And once again, thank you very much for just taking us in and making us part of your family here.
Okay, one of the things when I visited the ship yesterday and purchased was a beer mug. You guys drink?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, then this probably isn't appropriate, but... There's one from Devil's Club Brewery. Here's one from the Alaskan Brewery. Here's one from the distillery.
Oh, goodness.
And here's one from Barnaby's. I can put it back in here, so yeah, I don't want to break any news. Okay, and in addition, oh, they're right down there. We have a one-day visit to the City Museum and a one-day visit to the State Museum. So beer and history, part of Juneau. All right. Thank you very much and welcome, and thank you for your service. Brings us to approval of the minutes. Mr. Gregory.
Oh, thank you, Mayor Kelsch. I move to approve the minutes. Let's see here. From the meeting of April 24th, 2017. And ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Minutes are approved. Ms. Weldon.
I move that we approve the minutes of April 26, 2017, Special Assembly Meeting 2017, and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Minutes are approved. Ms. White.
Yes, I move that we accept the minutes of May 3, 2017, Special Assembly Meeting, and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Hearing none, they are approved. Manager's request for agenda items changes.
No changes, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Public participation on non-agenda items. Do we have anyone signed up for non-agenda items? That's me.
Ooh.
I know.
Reminds me to turn mine off.
Yeah, I made sure mine was on shut mode for sure.
Okay, Mr. Quayle, would you like to talk now about the regulations or when we get to the regulations?
It's a bit slower, so I'm on the agenda, so I don't have to, I guess.
When we get.
Or can I talk?
No. But when you get to the pedicabs, when you'd like to speak?
Yeah.
All right. We'll put you there then. All right. We have no one signed up to speak on non-agenda items. Brings us to the consent agenda. Public request for consent agenda changes other than ordinances for introduction. Do we have anybody? We do not. Assembly request for consent agenda changes. We do not. May we have a motion, Mr. Mankervis, Assembly Action.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move adoption of the consent agenda and would ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Seeing none, we will move to the regular agenda. That brings us to public hearing. Ordinance 2017-07. Madam Clerk.
This is an ordinance appropriating funds from the Treasury for FY18 school district operations.
Mr. Manager.
This ordinance would appropriate to the school district a fiscal year 18 operating budget of $87,267,200. This is an overall increase in the budget of $1.7 million from the FY17 amended budget. School district's operating budget consists of general operations, $72,020,700, special revenue, $7,164,400, other items, $8,082,100. The FY18 school budget is supported with a combination of funding sources that includes local funding of $26,935,900. This consists of $26,010,200 for general operations and $925,700 for programs and activities outside of the cap. These programs and activities include $740,700 for student activities, $50,000 for pupil transportation, $40,000 for food service, and $95,000 for community schools. The $26 million in general operations support is an increase of $1 million over FY17. The other program and activities funding is unchanged. The original ordinance was introduced at the April 5th, 2017 Special Assembly meeting and referred to the Assembly Finance Committee for deliberation. On April 26, 2017, a Special Assembly meeting was held to hear public comment and for the Assembly to state by motion the amount of local funding to be provided to the school district. The Assembly Finance Committee moved the ordinance at its May 10, 2017 meeting. The charter requires adoption by May 31st, 2017. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
I do not have anyone signed up for public comment. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to comment on this? If not, it will come back to the Assembly. Ms. Bladyshevsky.
I would move the adoption of ordinance 2017-17 and ask for unanimous consent.
07.
Oh, sorry, 07. Excuse me. 2017-07.
Is there any objection? Motion carries. Ordinance 2017-09.
An ordinance amending the official zoning map of the city and borough to change the zoning of a portion of USS 1568 Track B, locally known as Hansinger Pond, from rural reserve to industrial.
Mr. Manager.
On January 24, 2017, the Planning Commission approved the forwarding of an ordinance to the Assembly rezoning 23 acres of an 83-acre lot, locally known as the Hansinger Pond, from rural reserve to industrial with the following condition. Prior to a zone change from rural reserve to industrial, the property owner shall obtain and develop legal access to the subject parcel from Mapleston Way or an alternate access approved by CBJ Community Development Department Director in conformance with CBJ 4915-424. The Commission determined this condition was necessary because the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities will not approve use of the current access, a driveway on Yandukan Drive. After the Commission voted to recommend the rezone, the applicant verified the boundaries of the proposed rezone area with a local engineering firm. The applicant has since explained that the 23 acres originally identified in the application was based on a rough approximation. When the applicant verified final boundaries with the engineering firm, the firm noted that the original boundaries extended in Egan Drive right-of-way, and therefore adjustments were necessary. The revised estimation is 26.21 acres. The Community Development Department notes that this change would not alter the analysis and findings in the AME 2016-0007 staff report. I recommend you adopt this ordinance. There is a version B that Ms. Mead, I believe, has given to the clerk or to Mr. Steedle. In the published packet, the access condition was not included.
Joining the meeting.
In the version.
Lauren Jones.
Thank you. That was Lauren.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, section 3.
So, Mr. Manager, can you clarify how, again, how this is different?
Mr. Mayor, let me go to...
Mr. Steele?
Packet page 179 has your zoning ordinance, and you'll note that the difference between version B is section 3 condition. So it is the access condition that has been added in this version B. And it's actually on packet page 180, the second page of the ordinance.
Has everybody found it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. We have three people signed up right now, and I'm sure we'll have some others. Gerald Grant, when you come up, will you please state your name and your address, please?
Gerald Grant, 3170 Noel Avenue, Juneau, Alaska. I just would like the city to work with the owner of the property before we can get some zoning in there for they can get access for it. I'm in favor of them having a ORV park for a motocross and whatnot. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay, any clarification questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Stuart Cullen.
Hi, I'm Stuart Cohen. I live at 725 Fifth Street. I'm also speaking for my wife, who was not able to come today because she's working. I read in the newspaper today, I was kind of taken by surprise, this issue coming up again. And one of the things that was mentioned was that there was so much less public outcry this time around, which is the third time around, than the first two times. And I think the reason for that is probably pretty evident, or at least what I feel the reason is people feel like when a law is made and when planning decisions are made and zoning decisions are made, that those laws will stand and that those will be upheld by the city. And I think people have a right to believe that. I realize that in many situations, things need to change because a plan is a plan and new things develop and cities, and as they grow, need to be flexible. But in those cases, in a case such as the second crossing or a road out of town or the bringing up the mining ordinance again, those are situations where both people, where people on all sides are thinking of the common good, even if they may not agree on what the common good is. And in this case, that's not the situation. And this is a situation where one person got a hold of some land that was zoned a certain way with the assumption or the hope that they could change the zoning and undermine the laws that were in place and change it to make it more profitable. And so that's very different from most of the issues that come up before this board. I personally feel that it's not really the job of the board to change zoning on something that concerns a lot of people for the benefit of one person only for their financial gain. I realize that there's possibility of an RV park temporarily, but I still feel the same way. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Any clarification questions? Thank you. Susan Urbane?
Hi, my name is Susan Urban, and I live at 1801 Mark Allen Street here in Juneau. I've lived here for 22 years, and can you hear me all right? And I brought, I'm going to do a quick synopsis of what I feel, and then I'm also going to give you all copies and read from this letter from Patricia O'Brien, who couldn't be here today because she's sick and she's 77, and so I'm going to read her letter. Should I give them out now, or Lori, you said to... Thank you. So to start out, I testified at the Planning Commission, and I mentioned that I am a new member of the Lemon Creek Area Plan Steering Committee, so I've been learning a lot about zoning, and we've been doing a ton of meetings, and so I've been learning a lot. And so my feeling in going through the things for the proposal to rezone the Hunsinger Pond is that one, and just to review real fast, that it's next to the refuge. There are many, many, many biologists and other wildlife experts and bird experts who have said it's very similar and the birds are using it. There's documentation from the Fish and Game when they did an inventory that Mr. McNeil had asked for an inventory, and they did, and they found the birds, and they found the different types of grasses that you have on the refuge. And so it's very similar, and it's very close, and it's right next to the view shed that everybody has agreed on is a view shed. But right next to it is this area, and that's our view shed, too. And it has a huge visibility. The us residents who drive by every day and going to work, and, you know, like 20,000 people to and from downtown, and we see that expanse, and we enjoy that expanse, and it means a lot to us. And the tourists, there are going to be a million tourists this summer. And the tourists, this, Juneau is a very, very important gem, and it's important that we keep the integrity and we keep it as beautiful as it's been, and that we preserve it for our kids. And we preserve it for tourists 20 years from now, not, you know, you don't want to go to Juneau because it's all messed up. It's very, very important, and it's a huge economic driver for our city. And to ignore that and say, it's okay, let's make it industrial, that's like, I mean, this is the middle of the, this is the cornerstone in the middle of our town. And it's just, everybody sees it. Everybody who gets off the plane, everybody who goes out for a rafting trip or goes for a whaling trip, they all see it and love it. And we have tons of people who have come forth in last time in 2012 and 2013 to say how important it is for the tourists. And there, you know, I know about the need, and being on the Lemon Creek Area Plan Steering Committee, I've learned a lot about the need of having more industrial land in Juneau. But there is more, we can do other ways. We don't have to kick ourselves to take our gem. There are other places that we can have industrial land for our industry to grow. And, you know, like the perfect example of behind Costco and Home Depot. And, yes, that negotiation didn't work, but I think we need to keep trying to negotiate because it's not okay to compromise and tear apart our gem in the middle of our city. So I am in favor of trying to continue to negotiate, and then something like the SEAL, the Southeast Alaska Land Trust, they would buy it and then turn it over to the city and have the conservation easements on it. And there are other nonprofits who would do that too. So we just need to keep working and not just throw in the towel because we tried it once. So that's how I feel. And then to talk about or to read what Patricia O'Brien, now she did the was a big lead on the movement to convince the Planning Commission and the Assembly back in 2012 and 2013 to not let the designation go through for industrial. And when she did that, there was, as you know, and I think it's extremely important
from a public
Mary involvement Becker. Standpoint that, oh, I didn't ask you, do I have a limit on my time?
Oh. You do, but
what? Okay. Okay. And this letter represents 60 people, so it's, I'm kind of just, her letter is basically summarizing the different points of the different people and how many said that one point in their letters. And so I think it's extremely important from a public involvement standpoint is as a government entity, you cannot ignore public involvement. So to deal with this issue in 2017, to ignore the public involvement and not be like going through that
you know, memorizing that public involvement back then and every letter that was sent back in, that's extremely important. You can't be a government that says, oh, or a government agency that says, oh, well, it's a new day. We're not going to pay attention to what happened back in 2012, 2013. This is basically the same issue. So it's very important that you pay attention to that and consider that in your decision. So, and I asked Patricia about reading it, and she was very happy to when she's not feeling well. Dear Assembly members, and this is May 15th, so 2 days ago, I have been following the McNeil request for change to Royal Reserve designation of the area dubbed the Field of Fireweed since December 2012. After the long, hard-won victory for Juneau residents, tourism, and environmental integrity, I had hoped the issue was settled. Issues have not changed, so below are the sample comments from 2012 that are helped the Planning Commission and ultimately the Assembly see the value of retaining the Royal Reserve designation for the area. Following each issue in parentheses is the number of persons who express similar views. So Patricia has a mailing list now of 164 people, and we've had tremendous response, and hopefully that your inboxes in your email show that response. And unfortunately, they couldn't all be here. But so I'll just go through on some of these. General considerations. Only a handful of those commenting on the rezone were neighbors to the site. They were responding to a letter to the editor and represent all areas of Juneau. Most commenters consider wetlands to encompass the entire area under consideration, even though uplift areas are included. Scientists tell us that areas contiguous to the wetlands, uplift meadows and spruce, are also critically important, in part because of the need for a buffer to ensure the viability of the area legally designated as a wetland. Filling Hunzinger Pond, 3. This is from Lori Craig. I remember when the Borrow Pit was constructed in the 1970s to create fill for Egan Drive. In the ensuing 40-plus years, nature has converted the gravel pit from an eyesore to a prized scenic vista of spruce forest and brilliant fireweed in late summer. Again, that's from Lori Craig. Kate Troll, she talked about loss of habitat, especially considering the airport expansion. 7 people talked about this. With the airport expansion, there has already been a significant amount of wetland fill. With over 200 species of birds inhabiting the wetlands during their migration, shouldn't we be holding on to as much of the remaining unfilled areas as possible? Lack of mitigation for wetlands already lost. 9 people. Loss of wetlands to development has been a consistent theme since I moved to Juneau in 1961, and there has been virtually nothing done to mitigate this loss. Denise McPherson. Impact on the adjacent Mendenhall Refuge. 12 people. This is from Ryan Scott, Juneau area biologist. While the proposed zone change application is not specific to an identified project, future activity allowed by the zoning change has the potential to impact the refuge and its users. Okay, on the bird area, 18 people talked about this in their letters. The parcel in question is part of the Mendenhall Wetlands, globally designated as an important bird area by the National Audubon Society and BirdLife International, from Bruce Baker.
Ms. Urban?
Yes.
We got this at 12:30, so a lot of us had a chance to read it. So want to summarize?
Okay. And the reason I wanted to read it publicly is because I wanted everybody in the audience to hear it, and I wanted the media to hear it.
Well, you could pass this out to them if you want.
Yeah, I brought 15 copies. Okay. And so 18 people, just to summarize, I'll go through real quick. 18 people talked about the bird area, and Deb Rudis talked about the annual breeding bird survey in Juneau that includes 2 survey points that encompass this area of the refuge, and she cannot stress the importance enough of the area to wetland meadow nesting birds, migrating and resident raptors, and waterfowl that use the sloughs and inundated areas during high tides. Wildlife, 18 people responded or talked about that in their letters. Dismay, strong opposition to development at this location, 10 people. You don't have to be an environmentalist to understand that this issue is a dangerous one. Everyone, all walks of life, will be affected by this decision. Make sure it is the right decision, from Allison Hadley. Viewshed, 25 people talked about this. This particular property is part of a very sensitive viewshed and deserves, at the very least, continued protection as Royal Reserve for Juneau's tourism-dependent economy, environmental and aesthetic well-being, from Susan Sloss. 12 people talked about tourism. This is from Tina Brown. This area also plays a critical role in our large and growing tourism industry. Virtually every visitor arriving by ferry or air drives by this area. Cruise ship passengers who visit the Minnehaha Glacier or go whale watching or fishing from Mock Bay pass this area at least twice. Tour operators rely on this area, including the parcel in question, for talking points. Beauty. 24 people talked about beauty. The place is too beautiful, too much of what we love about Juneau, and too precious to allow development like this. We need to protect the beauty of wetlands for ourselves and for those who will make Juneau their home in the future. From Jack Cannon. Quality of life. 13 people talked about this. Why have so many taken time to testify in favor and preservation? Leaving this piece of our wetlands intact positively impacts our quality of life in Juneau. And quality of life leads to prosperity. When people want to work and live here, competent professionals are attracted. Residents look to how they can stay, and wealth is created. Quality of life attracts visitors too. If the visitor industry is to be sustained or enhanced, we must maintain what attracts people here in the first place. Then going down, buy the property, 7 people. The property should remain resource development, according to the comp plan, and perhaps more appropriately, be rezoned for public recreational use or some type of wildlife buffer, and the owners provided some kind of compensation. That's from John Hyde. And one thing that Patricia said in the end of her letter, well, just two quick things before I finish. 90% of the 60 comments from December 2012 are appropriate to the current proposal to change the designation from Rural Reserve to Industrial. I hope the representative comments and figures on topics of most concern are helpful to you in your deliberations. I might add that Murray Walsh, appearing for Bicknell before the 2012 Assembly, stated the land was, quote, worthless, end quote, without a land designation change. You can see the value that Juneau members of the community think otherwise. Thank you for your service to the best interests of our community. Patricia O'Brien. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Has anybody else signed up? Mr. Chappelle. I have you state your name and resident address.
Good evening. My name is Tom Chappelle. I live at 3188 Indian Cove Drive in Juneau. I'd like to make my point based on an analogy that I think is appropriate. My wife and I purchased property in Indian Cove 25 years ago. It's a waterfront property, and a little bit to our surprise when we purchased it, because of the date it was platted, our ownership of property goes down to mean high tide. Much more property than what is common today in a platted property. Our beach is a gravel beach that is, and our yard is 30 or so feet up from mean high tide. And so that beach property belongs to us, but is indeed used by many, many people. People that stroll the beach, people that, just enjoying the sunset, walking their kids or walking their dogs. But it's our property. We wouldn't dream of restricting access to that beach area. It was used by the Tlingits long before any of us here were born. But we purchased that property on the basis that we knew we had wetlands that were unusable, but we purchased it on the basis of we accepted the zoning and the conditions of the property and have maintained that. The property in question here was also purchased with the known restrictions at the time. The property owner was well aware of the wetlands classifications and other use restrictions. If if we desired to extend our yard and exclude people from that beach area, I can't imagine doing that and going in front of the Planning Commission and being so bold to make such a request. It would restrict public use. It would restrict use that has become public over time, is enjoyed by many. It's a very similar situation with this property, in my view. Although people aren't necessarily walking on it, they're certainly enjoying the property and have enjoyed the property for years. And so it is on that basis that I think the only reason that I can see that this was purchased under the restrictions it was undoubtedly bought at fair market value, whatever it was considered at that time for those restrictions. But if this ordinance is passed, it's a huge financial windfall to that property owner, and it's a detriment to the public, to the users that have long since enjoyed that property. I ask you to vote to reject this ordinance change. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Robert Kent. Okay, thank you. Frank Brookstrom.
Good evening, Frank Bergstrom, 7630 Glacier Highway, right across Glacier Highway from the Hansinger Pond. My comments tonight are the same as I had back in apparently 2013, so long ago, and that is that I can't see anything more logical to do with an old gravel pit next to an airport than zone it as industrial and let it be used for such purposes. I think that would be a wonderful thing to do to this town. And I think that it's that kind of economic development that goes with that type of zoning that will allow job creation and economic activity that this town sorely needs. So I fully support this effort in my viewshed there at Hansinger Park. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bergstrom.
Thank you.
Sue Randall.
Hello. Let's see if I got this close enough. I'm back with my hat. I thought I'd retired it, but I got it out this morning, unfortunately. The assembly members that will remember me coming to every meeting here about the Spoon Island cell tower are Mr. Nankervis and Mr. Keel. I see Mr. Jones is gone and Ms. Becker is gone, and the rest of you are new to the assembly. I come here as the cautionary tale. The Spoon Island cell tower, if you will look behind you, this off to the right of my home, this is what it looked like. And straight out from my home is the Spoon Island cell tower. What I want you to know and think about, besides all the things that people said to say, please reject this permit change of zoning, is that a lot of things look one way on a piece of paper. And somebody can come here and sit at this microphone and they can tell you all about their project. And they can make it sound really good, depending on how good of a salesperson they are. Or they may say, you know, there's legal grounds that you should grant me this. And I know that Mr. Bicknell has brought that up previously. And I also know that the cell tower Verizon brought up that same point with the Community Development Department. What I want you to pay attention to is that it can look one way on paper and it can look one way speaking out, but the reality of things is often quite different and impacts the community in a much different way. For me, it's this bright strobe light all day long, and on a bright sunny day you don't see it, but most of the days are gray and it's blaring. I have my windows covered with window film and I no longer can see my view. And when I come downstairs at night, the windows are pulsing from the red light across. So with a motocross park, I want you to realize that there's going to be a sound. Now, I live on the water, and I can hear all those people out there in the kayaks that paddle in front of my house, and I can hear you when you're down at the boat launch. I can hear you when you're sitting out there fishing. The sound that's going to reverberate and be magnified by the location of this motocross park is going to be like really loud. You're going to be out for a walk on the wetlands, and that's what you're going to hear. So that's just something that might not get brought up. A lot of people are bringing up all the impacts that it's going to have to our environment and nature and the things we hold dear and the reason we do live here. I live here. I moved here because there wasn't a road. I moved here for a lot of reasons like that. I moved here for the aesthetics and the community. There's a lot of other places that a motocross park could go. The city offered Mr. Becknell another piece of property, and he rejected it. This is 26 acres. Am I correct? Could somebody please give me feedback that way? Is that correct? 26 acres on our wetland. So there's a lot of other people that sat on the Planning Commission and on the Assembly that this cell tower is their legacy. Sometimes there's a lot of expletives that follow the mention of their names or, you know, that might be your legacy if you pass and change this zoning. It's not just what's on a piece of paper. It's not just the money in somebody's pocket. There's a lot of ways this can affect our community, and I think you need to think about that. And I guess that's all I have to say, and I haven't gotten myself in trouble, have I, Jean? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Keith?
If you give your name and resident address, please.
My name's Keith Immel, and I live at 6590 Glacier Highway. It's fairly close to the property in question. What I was wondering is from listening to these comments, is who actually owns this property? Do you own it? Do you own it? Because you sure are acting like you do.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor.
Can you make comments this way?
They sure are acting like they do. As far as I know, Mr. Becknell owns that property. And he's paying property taxes to the city on that property and has for a long time. As the owner, he has a right to develop that property. As far as the airport goes, so it's okay to expand the airport and eat up the wetlands, but it's not okay for a private property owner to do the same. That does not make sense. When you look around this community, how many motorcycle or ATV trails do we have? Very little, almost none. But we sure do have a bunch of foot and bicycle trails. So I guess that makes a motorized vehicle people second-class citizens. They're sure not being heard or their needs being addressed at all. You know, the claim is that many people enjoy the fireweed, but only a few will enjoy the motorcycle park. And again, you people that have commented, and the radio station, did they take a survey to come up with that, or are they just talking? I believe it's just talk. You know, in one other thing about the airport, what's louder, a 737 taking off or a motorcycle revving up? The noise issue is ridiculous. People walking around and enjoying the wetland, I don't think they go that close to the airport. In closing, I believe this community desperately needs a venue for motorcycle and ATV riders. And Mr. Bicknell's request should be granted. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Mr. Ingmill.
Thank you.
That concludes everyone that has signed up for public comment. Which brings us back to the Assembly. Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move adoption of Ordinance 2017-09, and I would like to speak to my motion.
Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A lot of passionate testimony tonight, and I appreciate that. We've gotten quite a bit of emails as well. And as somebody pointed out, there were several of us here, I think they're on the phone now with us, when this was before us before. And maybe not everybody knows, but this is a different rezone request than was before us last time. And it's a different finding by the Community Development Department and the Planning Commission on this different request. And if you look at page 181 of your packet, which is Exhibit A, which is right behind the ordinance itself, I will give an example of how this happens all the time. There is a D15 on there next to Egan Drive. That D15, some of you may have been here. I'm not sure how many were actually here because I don't remember exactly when that happened. But some of you may have been here when we had a developer come in and get that rezoned from D5. It's my recollection it was D5 to D15. That's just one example, but it happens regularly around town where people have property and they come in and ask for rezones. I've got two words on this one, and you've heard me use these words before: private property. I too enjoy the view, and I remind myself that it's private property. My wife does some fantastic Halloween decorations every year. Fantastic. People drive around town to see that stuff. What happens if she didn't want to do that anymore? When people come to my house and say, hey, you got to put up those Halloween decorations again. I don't know. But I remind myself, I don't know what Spike Bicknell is going to do with this property. I don't know what he's going to do. It's private property. There's a conditional use permit requirement. If he wants to do something with that, he's going to be back before the Planning Commission to discuss that and discuss the merits of that. What I can tell you is that the one constant is change. I can go visit my mother and see things there that weren't there when I lived there. This used to be a cow pasture once upon a time. Then it became a borrow pit. All the time it's been private property for somebody. And hopefully I'm consistent with this, where you don't see me say or tell people what they should and shouldn't do with private property just because I get to see it. I appreciate that it's beautiful. Perhaps whatever he does there will be beautiful in a different way. But it's private property. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nankervis.
Mr. Mayor,
yes.
If I may, I believe Mr. Nankervis meant to speak to 2017-09 version B. And he did not mention the version B at the start of his comments.
So B is the one we had.
Oh, I'm correct. We had the update. Thank you. Thank you. That was version B. Thank you, Mr. Manager.
Okay, Ms. Weldon and then Mrs. White. Ms. White.
Yes. For the record, I would like to disclose that my cousin is married to Spike Bicknell. I have talked to Ms. Mead, the city attorney, and she said I had no conflict, but I did want to disclose that information.
Okay, do you wish to speak to me? Okay, Ms. White.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would like to speak in favor of this motion, and I'd like to expand upon that if I may.
You may.
In Title 49, Article 2, which has a description of zoning districts, the Rural Reserve Zoning District is intended for lands primarily in public ownership, which means that it doesn't apply to this one. It shouldn't be zoned in your rural reserve to begin with, but managed for the conservation and development of natural resources for future community growth. So that's item number one. Item number two, within our actual ordinance, it says, whereas the resource development states that as resources are identified or extracted from these lands, they should be redesignated and rezoned appropriately. Mr. Bicknell has approached the Planning Commission and the Assembly. This is, I believe, his third attempt at trying to find a way to put this investment to its highest and best use. This time, a good portion of the original 80 some odd acre property is actually going to be going into a land trust. But I was looking back through some of the old stuff. Wetlands Review Board minutes, regular meeting October 20th, 2016. On page 2 of 3, where it was talking about Ms. Camry and her comments, but she one portion I highlighted. She particularly noted that rural reserve does not mean reserved in terms of preservation, and this zoning district is almost exclusively used for outlying areas as default zoning district until more specific uses may be identified, and that this parcel was a rare remnant in an urban area. So those are kind of just going with some other facts here. Mr. Nankervis discussed the portion about this that was private property, but I would just like to note that the city's assessor's office put a value on this property of $1,767,600. With our mill rate of 10.66, this year, Mr. Bicknell's tax bill on this particular parcel will be $18,842.62. He has been paying these taxes faithfully on this property since November of 2011. It's about time that this assembly have a backbone and allow a private property owner to develop their property and not give in to, I'm not even going to use the words, but he's put over $100,000 into our coffers just in property taxes, and we keep telling him, no, he can't do this. As to the use of the property for off-road vehicle park, they've talked ever since they shut down the area where the community gardens are and made that the community gardens. The trail around the community gardens is actually a trail worn as a racetrack for motorcycles back in the day. They've kind of half-heartedly looked for a place to put an off-road vehicle park. And, now we have somebody who's looking at a possibility of monetizing something that the city has given up on even trying to do. If that's the highest and best use of this property, that's a sad state of affairs. But as far as the fireweed, that area of the channel is still experiencing isostatic rebound, and the properties in front of it are going to continue to rise, and fireweed will grow there. So, once again, as a real estate broker, I will always stand on the rights of the property owner. And in this particular case, I support Mr. Nankervis's motion. Thank you.
Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to point out that Mr. Keel thankfully corrected me. I was wrong when I said the D15. It's on the map. It's on that same page, but it's the D18 spot. And I apologize for that little road that went up there that didn't recognize that little road, but I know whose property that is. So thank you, Mr. Keel, for that correction. It was the D18 rezone, not the D15. Thank you.
Is there anyone on the phone that wishes to speak?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is Lauren, if I could.
Please.
Thank you. I appreciate Mr. Nankervis and Ms. White's comments. Having sat through several years of planning commission meetings, it's been made clear that a rezone is not a permission to do anything. That, in fact, during the rezone, a landowner is not required to say what they're going to use it for. And if I understand correctly, the decision to rezone has absolutely nothing to do with the plans of the potential private owner. But I would point out that the current use, as has been reported in all of the press, if you look at the table of permissible uses, which is in the back, it's attachment 16 of the Planning Commission report that on the electronic version, since I'm in Anchorage, that's all I have, is way down at the bottom of the agenda. Rural reserve and industrial both allow the use for motocross, for motorcycles, whatever. So at least the current use can be in either rural reserve or industrial. Secondly, Mr. Nankervis is correct that almost every use in rural reserve and industrial requires a conditional use permit. I think that's why the number 3 is in each one of those tables. table of permissible uses. The concern that I will relate that comes from the airport, being their liaison, is that industrial rules are a little bit different than rural reserve. And depending on what the owner brings to the Planning Commission as the future use of that particular property, some of that is subject to FAA rules, height restrictions, close to the runway, incursion into airspace, any number of potential issues. Have been discussed at the airport board meetings, have been discussed by airport staff. The airport staff is currently in negotiations along with city staff with the owner of the property about a different access point, proposed land swap, because the current access is not allowed by DOT if it becomes industrial, and the airport is going to have to give access onto Mapleston in order for the owner to develop that property. Given what the current use is, given what the current zoning is, rural reserve, both require the access onto Mapleston, and both are currently allowed under rural reserve. Industrial changes the potential, I think, but not really a lot. As I went through the table of permissible uses, there were a lot of rural reserve that weren't allowed in industrial. There seemed to be almost no industrial that wasn't allowed in rural reserve. And I could be wrong, and maybe the one use that's different could be considerable. But I'm going to oppose this because I think the current use he can do under rural reserve, the current access onto Mapleston is being negotiated. That can be done under rural reserve. For that reason, I'm going to be a no vote on this.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Anyone else that wishes to speak? Mr. Gregory? Ms. Radishevsky?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I plan to vote yes on this rezone. My reasoning behind it is, as Ms. White said earlier, due to glacial uplift, our channel is becoming more shallow each year. Who knows how long this fireweed is going to be around. It used to be a rock pit. It conforms with our land use plan. The rezone has been approved by the Planning Commission, and they've recommended that the Assembly approve this rezone. Many people from our community are excited about this possible rezone and what it might bring for our younger generation. As I look through the Assembly goals from 2011 to 2015, I see that it lists identifying future industrial land as a priority, and I think that this rezone fits the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Gregory. Ms. Kladyszewski?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I am extremely inclined to be supportive of many of the people that testified regarding quality of life and how important those things are, and the reason we come to Juneau and the reason we live in Juneau is not for the weather, and most likely not for other things, and it is for the beauty that is here. It's also true that I spent a lot of time on the Planning Commission and know that we need industrial land. People say go find it somewhere else, and it's always there's always the notion that you can find it somewhere else, and in fact there is hardly any. A lot of our industrial land has been gobbled up by commercial. I tried to protect the land around Costco. It's turned into commercial, and that was supposed to be the industrial land, so we certainly need that. The call regarding this rezone for the Community Development Department was pretty clear. It complies with the land use comprehensive plan. The industrial land of this would be right adjacent to the industrial land at the airport, which is itself a noisy operation. So it really does comply with rational development, or careful development, right next to the highway, So, and it is a different proposal than the last one, which was rezoning more of it for commercial that did not comply with the land use plan. So people with the comprehensive plan, this does comply. It was a fairly easy call for the Community Development Department and a fairly easy call for the Planning Commission. Not that, that people weren't listening to members of the public who objected, but when looking at how the community develops and the competing interests that there are, wonderful viewshed and a place to do industrial activities. So this is, for me, actually a harder call than it was for the Planning Commission and for the for everybody else, but I'm going to be supportive of this because it is a good planning for our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Blash. Mr. Kiel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate the good debate and I'll agree that this is a much closer call than the last time we saw a proposal to rezone this area. I have struggled with this one, and I, like Mr. Jones, I looked through the table of permissible uses, and I'm deeply confused at the idea of a motocross or a off-road bike track is the reason we need to rezone it, because the current zoning allows a permit for that on exactly the same terms as the new zone would. So that can't be it. but so I also agree that the question of a rezone is not about, should not be about the specific proposal that the current owner has. It's the future use of the land. And so I got a little confused because it's remarkable how much overlap there is between a rural reserve zoning and an industrial zoning. The only things I could really find of any significance that would be allowed with the new zoning that aren't allowed with the current would be a parking lot or parking garage, large offices, or a sorting and storage yard for a salvage operation. But there are a number of things that would be allowed with the current zoning that would not be allowed with industrial. above all else, housing. You can't build single family in industrial, can't build duplexes, can't put a hotel there, can't put an RV or mobile home park there, can't put a child care there. Don't know that that's an ideal spot for those things. But one of the things that the comprehensive plan calls for is balancing community values. And we talk both about the need to protect scenic view sheds and the need to have industrial land and economic activity. I think actually a couple of years ago, I may have been the one who added identifying additional industrial land to our assembly goals, and I keep pushing on a particular area for that where nobody lives yet. But Mr. Nankervis is right. The D18 zoning on the other side of the highway was pretty controversial, and we did it. And I think increased housing density is important. So taking housing off the list bothers me a little bit. But the other thing that bothers me some is balancing the community values and needs, because they're both needs. And we've heard, I'm not going to repeat everybody's references to the tourism economy and the various pushes and pulls that we have. So I come down on this one in opposing this rezone. I think, you know, part of it is just where I grew up, in areas where along the main highway there were big industrial lots and it was everything the tourism companies could do to get people past them as fast as they could, because it was a real detriment to the experience, the Alaska experience. They'd talk, try and get people to look up the Chugach Mountains instead of anywhere near where they actually were. Didn't work that well when the cloud cover was low and Sorry, Ms. Gladyszewski, but some of us did move here for the weather. I burn easily. What can I tell you? So for all those reasons, I'm going to be a no vote. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Any further assembly comment?
Just a quick one. The largest landowner within the city and borough of Juneau, if I remember correctly, is the city and borough of Juneau, and I believe that we have hundreds, if not thousands, of acres that are set aside for preservation and recreation. So, that we already own. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none. You have before you 2017-09B. Is there objection?
There is.
Yes.
Okay. Well, the clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Nan Kurvis.
Yes.
Ms. Weldon.
Yes.
Ms. White.
Yes.
Ms. Becker. Ms. Gladyszewski.
Yes.
Mr. Gregory.
Madam Clerk, I don't know if I'm going to say yes.
Ms. Becker, did you vote?
Yes, I am sorry. I'm having a hard time with my recent surgeries, causing me not to talk very well. But yes, my vote is yes.
Is that a yes? Okay.
Yes. Yes, it's a yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Gregory?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
No.
Mr. Keel?
No.
Mayor Kelch?
Yes.
Motion carries. 6-3.
6-2.
What's the count?
7-2. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Mr. Jones. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry.
7-2.
Which is it?
7-2. Sorry.
Do you wish to take a short break or do you wish to continue? 5 minutes?
5 minutes, please.
So at quarter after, we need to be back here ready to go.
Absolutely.
Ordinance 2017-10. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance authorizing the sale of foreclosed property located at 15860 Glacier Highway by public auction.
Mr. Manager.
This ordinance addresses the final step in the foreclosure process of real property located at 15860 Glacier Highway. Back property taxes owed on the property total $16,356.10 and are from tax years 2014, 15, and 16. State law provides that tax foreclosed property conveyed to a municipality and not required for a public purpose may be sold. This ordinance would establish that the property is not needed for a public purpose and authorizes the manager to dispose of it by public outcry auction held in accordance with CBJ 5309-230. But version B has also been included in the packet for your consideration. Version B authorizes a secondary method of sale in the event the property is not successfully disposed of via outcry auction. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
And we do have public comment. Give your name and address, please.
Yes, Carmen Lorenz, 15860 Glacier Highway, owner of said property.
Ms. Lorenz, if you could speak into the microphone because we have two people listening.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hello. It'll pick you up. Oh, good. It'll pick. Okay, good. I've been around one of these for years. Okay. Is that better?
It's good.
Okay, Carmen Lorenz, 15860, said owner of property.
Okay. And if you'd like to address the assembly?
Yes, I would.
Please do so.
Okay. Yes, I do owe the city that amount of money, which I have every intention of paying. Make a long story short, my husband passed away in 2013. I did not handle that well. I paid my property taxes that year. that I had an accident in January 2014 where I fell down, was in the hospital for quite some time, and came back and home, and after being in Seattle for quite a while, and then had to start getting things in order, many things from my husband's death, and I failed to pay 2014, and as I went on, and then I did not pay 2015 or 16, just had many issues going on, and that in fact is the reason I am in this position, no fault but my own. I have a plan on to repay that amount of money and would like to address that at this time.
Please do so.
Okay. What I can offer is I can start paying. Like I said, this has been my family for 30 years. It's my husband, been up here, marine biologist, and very, very important to me to carry on his legacy. I plan on starting to pay minimum $500 per month as I'm working on getting a loan on this property. I've had several doctor's appointments and not been able to get out to a few places where I have options available. I had hoped to get to them and was not. I plan on paying, as I'm getting this loan, $500 per month on the 1st and then another $500 on the 25th. And as I'm working on this loan towards this amount. And then starting this year, I will have absolutely no problem with paying property taxes here on out. I do have good retirement coming in, and I will be now able to, I'll have almost $2,000 after I get the rest of some paperwork done. As of starting next month, I'll be making about $2,000 per month on my retirement. And that is the plan that I have to offer. And then, like I said, as of that would be towards it, if getting a loan, which I do have some good options out there, and some, a couple of bank managers that are looking very promising. And I do not have a problem here on out for making those property taxes on time, which is, I understand, September 30th, correct?
Correct. Questions from the Assembly? Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I've got a question for the city manager. Mr. Watt, the city has already foreclosed on this property, is that correct? And if so, is this an option still to start a repayment agreement when we're at this stage?
Thank you. Through the mayor, we have already foreclosed on the property, so the property is owned by the CBJ. And what Ms. Lorenz has is a essentially a right of repurchase prior to us selling it.
And the second part was the repayment agreement of $500. At this point, is this too late or?
Through the chair, so we might bring Mr. Bartholomew up on mechanical issues, but the longer the taxes are unpaid, the more they accrue, and the more the penalties accrue. And so, if the property was repurchased for the accrued debt, that would be a calculation that would happen at the date of repurchase. I'm going to ask Mr. Bartholomew to come up.
I'm requesting extension of.
I'm just trying to think mechanically through it. I will note that in the ordinance section 3, there is an effective date of the ordinance. And so if you pass the ordinance, staff would not proceed with the property disposal until the ordinance was effective.
Might I address one more issue?
One moment. Yeah, one moment, please. Mr. Keel, did you have
a question for, I guess, Ms. Lorenz?
Yes.
Do you have a sense of, by how long it would take. You talked about you were pursuing a loan. How long might it take to?
Yes, that's partially what I wanted to address. I've gotten also into Alaska Legal Services and for assistance in this to make sure I do absolutely everything correctly. I'm looking at, so I'm planning on paying 2017. I would say, let's see, this is May. July 31st. Let's make it August 1st at that point, yes.
Okay. Mr. Bartholomew.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm not super familiar with the process. I do understand, as Mr. Watt has stated, that the prior owner does have the right to repurchase it up until disposal. And if this ordinance is authorizing disposal, and it would be the intent of the city, once it was effective, to move as judiciously as possible just to limit liability and all those types of things. I don't know if historically we've entered into payment plans in this type of situation versus just requiring complete payoff when it's been an extended process and period of time. So that I might have to follow up on. But it sounds like at least initially there would have to be the acceptance of a plan, even if it had a near-term date for payoff, it wouldn't be within the time frame. You know, the ordinance would be effective before then, I'll defer to Mr. Watt, but I'm assuming even if it was effective, we still would have a decision to make of when we actually triggered disposal, so we could adjust that date.
Mr. Gregory and then Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Bartholomew, can you explain to us the procedure that we have gone through to get to this point? Because, you know, just thinking about future properties, should they ever end up in this situation, we'd hate to have each and every one of these have to go through the assembly every time. We hope that when, you know, your department contacts these individuals, that they would take your communication seriously, knowing that this is going to happen.
Right. I think I'll do two things. One, I'll speak to the process, which is it's been extremely extensive, multiple years, lots of notices, lots of trying to reach out, especially during this last process when we were actually going through foreclosure. So I would say there's been an extremely large amount of communication and warning and notice. I think the other biggest issue is currently the property's occupied. And we have to, we believe it's occupied. And so we also have ownership of a property that we haven't taken full control of. And the lands department is coordinating with CDD and the manager's office to initiate that. So we do have exposure and uncertainty that would be extended by us deferring the disposal.
Mr. Manager, Mr. Gill.
I'll add a couple notes. We've reached out to Fairbanks and Anchorage to see how they handle this kind of case. For Juneau, it's unusual. It's not in my institutional memory when we last did this. And both Anchorage and Fairbanks dispose of properties as is, whereas. So if they're occupied, that's comes with the sale. And they don't try to intervene and solve that issue for prospective buyers.
Mr. Keel and Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So for city staff, dusting the cobwebs off my memory, in a tax foreclosure on a home, the owner has, I believe, a one-year, I think it's called a redemption period or something, from the date of foreclosure. When does that expire? What's the end of that?
In this situation, it expired 2 or 3 months ago. So we went through a one-year redemption period. So we actually don't take title or the deed until that's over. So we actually foreclosed like 15 months ago, and then we waited for the redemption period to expire. We did notice throughout the redemption period. Then at the expiration of the redemption period, we did notice an outreach. The redemption period expired, and that's when we actually went and requested what's called the clerk's deed and had the court transfer title to the city officially.
Ah.
But there is still an ongoing right under state law prior to disposal. So even after redemption, up until disposal, the prior owner could buy the property back for the tax liability due.
Mr. Nankervis and then Ms. Radiszewski.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Two questions for staff then, and thank you, ma'am, for coming in tonight. It seems to me I recall where we had a foreclosure circumstance before us where we did do a repayment plan, but I believe that is probably before we took the title on the property. And I want to say maybe 2 years ago we did this where there was back property taxes owed. A question about that then is, have we done it before? And the second is a process question. So hypothetical, let's say somebody owes whatever $30,000 in back taxes. We foreclose, we take the property. Is there anything that would prevent them from coming back and submitting a sealed bid and getting their own property, or it used to be their property, back for say $15,000 because nobody else bid, and then the thirty grand owed in my example goes away, and they end up, you see what I'm saying, how they'd get around paying that and still get back in the house?
Yeah. So I'm not, if I was involved in a foreclosure that had a payment plan that where we didn't follow through on it because the payment plan, I need to talk to the Treasury Department because I'm not, I couldn't speak to it tonight. I don't remember it. And then I think the issue of if someone buying the property for under the taxes due, I think we would set a minimum price at the point of sale, and if we didn't get it, we might retain that property and come back to the assembly.
Mr. Manager?
Mr. Mayor, so in the ordinance in Section 2, we detail that we would do a public outcry auction, or in the event that the outcry auction doesn't successfully dispose of the property, by sealed bid in accordance with city code. In both instances, we would set a minimum sale price, and anything received in excess of the sale price would be remitted to Ms. Lorenz. Our interest simply is in recovering the taxes. The last I checked about a month ago, I believe the assessor had the home and property assessed at about $390,000. We would set a minimum bid. Something close to 390, but not quite there.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Radiszewski and then Mr. Keel.
You sort of answered one of my questions. So if the bids, whatever you got for the house, the city would just take the taxes and give the rest to Ms. Lorenz?
Correct.
Okay, that was because I was like, I didn't get how this was working. And thank you. And you said you tried to give a lot of notices. Do you know they got there and you did some sort of seal? How did you contact the owner? I'm just trying to understand, you know, the process.
Yeah, again, I don't have that list in front of me of all the different transactions and what kind of it, but I don't know if Ms. Lorenz could speak to that.
She's raising her hand.
Mr.
Mayor,
I could speak to that, yes.
How about right now would be a great time.
Okay, and it's not been a year that it was foreclosed on. It's been much more recent than that, officially. And it's not been multiple notices. I did receive them, and I kept talking to the city in 2014 and 15 and was working with her name's Cara. Down there, I called her on several occasions, and she could vouch for that I have kept in touch with them at the time and tried to explain my situation and what I was going through, which again is my issue and not the city's. And as far as the notices, there's been three. It's not been the last year, so I think it's been approximate. I don't know if Rory can. I believe it's been, and Rob delivered one, and I had notices sent to me, mail, stating, I mean, I have them at home, 2014, 2015. And actually, the tax assessment on the property this year is actually $410,000, by the way. I just recently got that. And I did want to address that, not calling anybody. Just maybe there was just some misinformation taken there as far as a year and of all this and how many notifications I had gotten officially, you know, regarding foreclosure.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It occurred to me during our conversation when this came up at a previous committee, I had asked staff to look into whether there was a public purpose, and I was specifically thinking of the high school home build project. I think staff got back to me personally, but I don't remember it being on the record, so maybe I could turn to the manager now and just ask you to share with the rest of the assembly your research as to whether this would be an appropriate lot for a public purpose like that.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. So when the ordinance was introduced, I believe in February, you requested information on that, and land staff reached out, and the home build program took some time and considered that and ultimately decided it was not an appropriate parcel for their needs. We also did, for a brief period of time, have some interest from the hospital, and the hospital then came to believe it was not property that they were interested in. Following that request at that assembly meeting in February, I reached out to Ms. Lorenz and met with her and corresponded by email. Mr. Steedel also made efforts to reach out, as did Mr. Cheney. And we tried to assist Ms. Lorenz in making connections to be able to satisfy the back taxes. But obviously we're here today because that hasn't been successful.
Thank you.
Mr. Gregory, and then I'll check to see if anybody on the phone wants to ask a question. Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have two concerns about this matter. Firstly is that we have a tenant living in a building that we now own as a city and borough of Juneau, and that we don't know the condition of that building and if there are any dangers to the tenant that is living in there. The other issue is that now that the property is in the name of the city and borough of Juneau, I am curious as to whether or not you may have trouble, Ms. Lorenz, getting a loan on that property.
No, I don't really see that because the property itself is valued extremely high, and the building does need renovation in the process. And personally, I'll be homeless if I'm not living there. And my son is there with his fiance. Yes, they've been taking care of it. And I, in this process, will also be able to have the renovation loan now in order to correct the things that have happened with it during this time that I had my illnesses and problems. And that was, we're working with that very well right now. So I really don't know what else to say outside of the fact that it is valued at $410,000, a lot to lose, but it is the home. It is, like I said, a legacy of my husband and myself and my family, my granddaughters, my son, everybody. It is the family homestead in basically a way. And I do not want to lose that. And even if it went open auction, you're not going to get that much over. What money I would make off of, people are smart. I'm not going to get near the value of that property. And that's a given, and that's just good sense. And I think Debbie probably attests to that in the realty market that, you know, is we turn around, there'll be quite a profit made there. Probably be a realty that buys the property and then resells it, most likely. I mean, that would make good sense. So I'm really, I would never get a return on that property, and nor would I ever get, again, I'll be homeless at the time, and I have no clue as to where I go until this process is done. I have, so, I mean, I do have a lot of issues to deal with, and my plan, I'm willing to sign any legal documents stating that I will stick right to that plan. If I falter within length of time, then you can say it's null and void. And I get a special attorney to do that. So I'm willing to do that, not just on based on my word and what I'm saying to you today.
Okay, Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, so I think, as I stated earlier, our interest solely is in recouping taxes and penalties owed, and to that effect, I did write a letter for Ms. Lorenz that she could take to banking institutions that explained essentially that she could purchase the property for those back taxes to help assist with that. I recognize that this is a family home and that we don't typically find ourselves in this position, but we do have a duty to collect the taxes owed. And I guess I believe that our best role is neither landlord or banking institution. And I think we need a time certain set for repayment of the taxes. The ordinance lists 30 days after adoption. Tonight is the 15th. That would set you at June 15th if the assembly thought it was appropriate to provide more room on that, then I would amend the Section 3 effective date to the date of your choosing.
Okay, I have Ms. White and Mr. Keel, but before that, Mr. Jones or Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Most of my questions have been answered. The manager went through what he's done since February, and he'd already informed me of that since I was interested. So I don't have any more comments. Thanks.
Ms. Becker?
I'm fine. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Ms. White?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I had also talked to the city manager briefly about this at one point, and it sounded a little bit more straightforward. So I started kind of digging around. We did our actual final judgment and decree of foreclosure on March 2nd of 2016, but we also had a similar document that I can't pull up on my iPad, filed September 10th of 2013. And I'm just kind of, is there any other part of this story I'm missing? That's part one. Part two, I know as part of any mortgage, a lender is always in second position, only subject to property taxes, and the lenders can lose their entire investment based upon the property taxes. So I have a feeling most mortgage people, and of course I'm not going to call one right now, but most of them would require that lien be satisfied in full prior to any other expenditure of funds from any type of a loan on real property. But I am kind of curious about this other thing, finding the second recording from 3 years prior.
I don't have that information. It could have been from a previous foreclosure process from earlier taxes, but I definitely would have to check with the assessor and treasury office.
Okay. Thank you.
May I address that?
Pardon?
May I address that at all?
If you could.
I never received any foreclosure notices on the property like this. I did notice that if I didn't pay that it could possibly go, but I was never foreclosed upon, you know, start any foreclosure process during that time. Not in 2013, the property taxes were paid. So I mean, I think you said 2013, did mm-hmm. you not? No, property taxes were paid in 2013. So, and so in 2014, I was told when I called in that they you still had 2015, once I talked to the city, that you still were working on the 2014 taxes and to just do what I could. And that was verbal conversations with the city. So that was in 2015. So, and then this last year, yes. But during my surgery, as I explained, and gave my information on that. But there was no foreclosure notice in 2014 or 14 or 15. It wasn't until this year that I got a foreclosure notice. So I don't know where that information came from.
Okay, Mr. Keel, Ms. Gladyszewski, Mr. Gregory.
Oh, Mr. Mayor, has the ordinance been moved or?
No.
Okay.
There are still public comment.
Okay. Well,
assembly comment.
I was ready to make a motion, so if you're ready.
I am. I don't want to cut off the conversation with Mr. Gregory and Ms. Gladyszewski.
When you're ready.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I understand that the property has been foreclosed upon according to Ms. White as of March 2016, so that's done. And
actually, it's a notice of impending foreclosure, and it appears that it's put out on anybody who's behind on their property taxes.
So anyway, the property has been foreclosed upon, and the city owns it. So is there any way to take that back? I mean, you know, normally, I mean, what I'm familiar with is a payment plan, and you sign a piece of paper that says, I promise to pay X by X dollars by this date, Y dollars by this date. Sounds like that never happened. Is that avenue gone?
Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, that avenue is gone. And I believe that avenue existed in the past. So we often have properties that go into arrears on their taxes, and we have lots of people that come current. But this property did not. So it is essentially a piece of city property, and our code guides us on all city property, and that's why in the manager's report and the ordinance, we're pointing to our authority under Title 53 for disposal of city property, except that since this is a property that was foreclosed on, the prior owner has that right of repurchase right up until we dispose of it.
So just follow up. So the options at this point is to make a date, and up until that date, Ms. Lorenz has the opportunity to pay the taxes and...
That's correct.
There's no auction.
That's
so
correct.
Right now, the way it says is 30 days, but we could make it August 1st if we wanted.
That's correct.
The choice. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Gregory?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I, too, am ready for a motion.
Okay. Well, Mr. Keel had one in mind first, so we'll go with Mr. Okay. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move Ordinance 2017-10B. And I have an amendment. I would move that we replace the effective date with August 2nd, 2017.
Is there a discussion on the amendment? Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would object to that amendment.
Okay, do you wish to speak to your objection?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I do. And it pains me to say this, but there's been ample opportunity to have this addressed, and it hasn't been yet. But far more concerning to me is by putting this off with the current situation with at least two people, my guess is maybe more than that, but that's a guess, but we heard today at least two people living in our building, the city's building, that I think that's inappropriate to put it off 3 months as much as I, if we weren't at this point where it was the city's property, I would gladly go with that amendment to put this off. But since it's already ours and there are people in it, I have some serious concerns over that. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I, too, object with the motion. I am concerned about the liability of what is happening in that unit without a lease. I'm concerned about should somebody get hurt, the safety and condition of the wiring or of the overall safety of the structure. And that looking at the history on this, there are 3 years of unpaid taxes and ample opportunities to bring the account current. And I am sure that staff has spent a lot of time working through this issue, and that the manager has suggested in the ordinance 30 days, and for that reason, I object.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, just to speak to the amendment, I appreciate those concerns. I am not proposing, by amending the effective date of this ordinance, any changes to our land management code. I am not giving any direction to staff with regard to inspections, securing the property, or anything else. I'm not trying to micromanage that. I'm interested only in the final opportunity for redemption before we sell this property to the highest bidder.
Any further discussion? Ms. Weldon.
I'd like to object to ask a question. Have we started an eviction process of the tenants?
Mr. Manager?
We have not.
And can we start one? Can I follow up? Can we start one with what we have now, or can, if we wait 90 days, will that change anything?
Through the mayor, we could start that.
I withdraw my objection.
Okay. Further discussion on the amendment, which would change the effective date. There has been objection. Clerk, please call the roll.
And just for clarification, this is ordinance 2017-10 version B.
This is the amendment.
Okay.
Yes, version B.
Okay. Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
No.
Ms. Weldon?
Yes.
Ms. White?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
No.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Gregory?
No.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mayor Kelch?
Yes.
Motion carries 6-3.
Okay, we're back to the main motion as amended with the effective date of August 2nd, 2017. Is there further discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, motion carries. Okay. We're now up to unfinished business.
Mr. Mayor, I have no unfinished business.
Okay, new business. Regulation amending 05 CBJAC 15 dockage charges, reservation charges, policy, and loading permit. This is regulation, but I will accept on these two public comment if there is any public comment. Seeing none, Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I, before I make a motion, I have a question for the port director, if possible. Or do you need the motion first? All right. I would move that we allow these regulations before us to take effect without taking the item up for assembly consideration in accordance with CBJ 0160.260. And I have a question prior to that. Mr. Mayor, if I may.
State your question, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Yucatil, thank you for coming up here. I'm probably missing it in here somewhere, but I can't find what the reservation charges are. And I'm referring to page 2 of the regulations, 05 CBJAC 15035, and it refers me back to 030, but I can't find the language that says what the reservation charge is. I can find the language on what it is to moor it, but I can't see the reservation charges. Could you help me, please?
Yes, Mr. Nankervis. So the intent of the regulation is that if somebody makes a reservation and they're greater than 200 feet, that's $3 per foot per day. So that is the reservation fee. So that is what they would be out if they did not show up. So it's just a, it's not really a reservation fee, but it is the daily fee for use.
Okay, they're just prepaying, if I may, Mr. Mayor, they're just prepaying their daily fee. Is that, would you, okay. Thank you. I don't have an objection now that my question is answered, and I have already moved something, so.
All right. There's no other questions. We will accept this then and go on to the next set.
Thank you.
Regulation amending 20 CBJAC 40 commercial passenger vehicle pedicabs, and I will accept public testimony on this. Mr. Quayle.
William Quayle, 415 Willoughby, number 305. This regulation, they did a great job starting out. Okay, they changed the, took my advice and changed the insurance. It was wrong. They were trying to insure a bicycle with auto insurance. They changed the inspection fees, and they still have the non-operator fees at $25. Only problem is they didn't finish painting the airplane. I used to paint airplanes. One of the big issues, I've been fighting this ever since June, is they're still charging the same amount what they charge the taxis and buses. And this regulation was made before we started having pedicabs and that, and they're still charging the same old fee, which is $1,500 for the certificate fee. If you have a single pedicab, it's kind of hard to recuperate at $5 and $10 and $15. It takes about 130 rides. Well, that turns out to be, when it comes to $1,500 making that up, it's you barely break even. And I'm not in the business to lose money. The city does not need, okay, I figured it only takes 10 hours to administer one business. The city does not need $150 an hour, okay, to take care of one pedicab. It's just it's just insane, okay? City of Sitka only charges $40, which I think is very reasonable, and that's what we should be charging. I am advocating that they send back this regulation to the police department. I don't think the police department should be taking care of the regulations in the first place. They did the minimum what they were supposed to do, and they didn't finish the job. There should be a standalone pedicab regulation that were separate from the taxis and buses. Okay, and also on top of that, they have a limitation where we can't operate at night. Now, if you've ever seen, I sent you the videos, a coaster pedicab, it's an insult to my manufacturer. They have very adequate lights, and they should be able to operate at night. I'm into operating my business 12 months out of the year and not just seasonal. Okay, I mean, it's not, I'm into making it. I get asked about rides all year. And in fact, I hate the other day I turned three down going to the Mendenhall, lower Mendenhall Trail. And I had to turn the people down. And even if they changed it, okay, I would still have to turn them down because I'm outside downtown. I shouldn't have to be doing that. I want to be able to take people if they're in the valley, you can give rides to people in the valley. If you want to give rights when it comes to people, when doing business, when it comes to taking care of weddings, we can take care of weddings. And also when it comes to operating at night during the winter. And I sent you a video with me bicycling at night. I mean, during the winter time, that doesn't hold water, okay? And also when it comes to the tourist trade, a pedicab can only take three at a time. I'm sorry. There's no other way you can put it. You can have five boats out there. We can still only take three at a time. Okay? So when it comes to when it comes to the, you know, using the tourist trade as a reason to charge the $1,500, it doesn't hold water, I don't think. And they really should get it, so it should be encouraging business. It should not be discouraging business. The way it is now, anybody that has any kind of interest, if I tell them how much it is to start, they won't start it. You can guarantee that. You're not going to get any more. It's just like the city charging 20% for property tax. Eventually, you're going to have people, you're going to be losing people.
Okay, do you want to summarize for us?
Yeah. I mean, okay. Let's say if the city charged 20% on property tax, okay, and you can only charge so long until people start moving, okay? They say they can't pay the property tax, and that's it. Same thing when it comes to the city's bottom line. It is better for the city to charge $400 plus get the sales tax than try to soak the business person for $1,500, okay, and you get nothing. Okay, it is right now. I'm not going to pay $1,500. And you're getting nothing. Okay, and every quarter I get asked on my business license, you know, have I made any money? I want to show that I showed something, okay? But the way you got it right now, you made the fee so high, okay, that I can't see where it's going to be profitable for making any kind of decent profit. And I've been in the business, for insurance business, 40-plus years, okay? I find it highly unethical to be charging that much. I won't pay the blackmail. I just won't. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Quayle. Mr. Nankervis?
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, I do have a question for Mr. Quayle. Having in mind your comment about the plane and not having the whole plane painted, have you seen what's before us today? Correct? Have you seen what's before us today?
I've seen what you
have. Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I was looking for. Yes. So, is what's in front of us today appropriately modified?
It's fine.
In your opinion?
It's fine.
Thank you.
It passes. In fact, I helped to make it.
Thank you.
Okay? I helped. If it wasn't for me, it would be still the same.
Okay.
Okay? But, you know, it
thank
you.
No, we're through.
Okay.
Thank you.
Now, what I'm asking for the assembly is to send it back to be redone, okay, and finish the job.
Okay, I have another speaker, Mr. Hope.
Oh, okay.
Good evening, Mayor Kolsch, Assembly members. My name is James Houck. I'm the owner of Juno Pedicabs, Alaskan Pedicab Tours, doing business as Juno Pedicabs. I have four cabs. I waded through the maze of regulations across ports and harbors and the Juno Police Department, and am successfully doing business as we speak. I have taken time out of my cab today to come in and speak to you today. I'm having trouble finding drivers, but I will be successful in finding drivers, and with just two cabs, I'm having no problems meeting the payments requirements, etc., that you have put in place. I would argue that I have the ability to make just as much as a cab driver every single day, and I would not want to get crosswise with the cab drivers who very friendly with. On the docks, they know that I pay the same amount that they do to take up those spaces, to pick up those passengers, and to take those passengers around. I have made sacrifices to continue to live in this city and will continue to do so because I enjoy it so much. I retired from the Coast Guard after 26 years service last July, and the pedicab business is a perfect way for me to remain here. Remain outside, put smiles on people's faces. Your reduction of the fee for auditing the cabs from $50 to $25 looks good on paper, but I designed the checklist for auditing the cabs and then was told by the police department to take them to Cycle Alaska and paid almost $100 a piece for Cycle Alaska to run through the checklist on them. I did not pay the police department that fee in lieu of having already paid the $400, and they seem completely reasonable in light of that. I have no interest in operating at night. It's everything I can do to ride that pedicab 15, 16 hours a day right now, and we're heading towards 18-hour days. I have no interest in running the company year-round. I have received no interest from locals aside from taking the tour out of curiosity. I don't anticipate that anyone would want to jump in my cab at 32 degrees. I certainly wouldn't want to drive it at that temperature. I appreciate you taking the time to hear my comments, and I wish you all a great evening.
Any clarification questions, Mr. Nankervis?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Houck, first off, thank you for your service. My questions for you are the same that I had for Mr. Quayle. Have you read what's before us, and are you comfortable? You briefly spoke to this. I think you are comfortable that the changes with what's in front of us are adequate.
I do think the changes that are in front of us are adequate. I don't know that you all understand that it costs me $2,700 a year just to insure the four cabs that I have running right now, pedicabs, in addition to all the other fees. But I made a conscious decision to do this, and I'm able to make a profit in light of it, or in spite of it.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Kolsch.
Okay. Help Mr. Nankervis, do you want to?
Sure. Mr. Mayor, I would move that we allow the regulations before us to take effect without taking the item up for assembly consideration in accordance with CBJ 01.60.260.
All right. We're on to C. Go ahead, please.
There was no objection.
No.
What?
Okay. This is the authorization for the manager to enter into a negotiated fair market value sale of lot to Renninger Subdivision.
Mr. Manager.
The Lands Office received an application from the Alaska Housing Development Corporation to purchase Lot 2 Renninger Subdivision. AHDC is a local not-for-profit corporation which has developed, owns, and manages 136 affordable rental units on three sites in the same Lemon Creek neighborhood as Lot 2. Their goal is to develop Lot 2 along with the development of Lot 6 and 7 in the Renninger Subdivision. Lands Committee provided a motion of support for this direct negotiation at its May 1st, 2017 meeting. As established in CBJ 5309-260A, staff recommends that this proposal be pursued by direct negotiation with the proposers because of the direct correlation with the Assembly housing goals. I request a motion of support to enter into direct negotiations for the disposal of Lot 2 Renninger Subdivision with the Alaska Housing Development Corporation at fair market value.
Okay. Any public comment? Mr. Gregory, maybe we have a motion of support.
Thank you, Mayor Kelsch. I move that the Assembly support the manager's requested motion to enter into direct negotiations for the disposal of Lot 2 of the Renninger Subdivision with the Alaska Housing Development Corporation at fair market value and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Motion carries.
Mr. Mayor, there is objection for a question.
Certainly. Mr. Jones.
Thank you. I thought Lot 2 was the lot that we reserved for the university high school build. Is this a change to that, or am I mistaken on the lot number, since as I went through the electronic package and the paper package, I can't find a map, so I have absolutely no idea what Lot 2 is.
Okay, Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, for the benefit of the people on the phone, we're looking in the back of the package, and I do not see a map. What I will tell you is that
the intention is not to sell the same property twice. The intention is to sell a property that previously the Pacific Development Group was interested in and was notified that we were moving on to other sales.
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, Mr. Jones.
Well, that concerns me because if I remember lot 1, 2, 3, and maybe 4 were looked at as being developable. They were the top 4. And the Lands Committee allowed either lot 2 or lot 3, but I thought it was lot 2, for sale for the housing project. And they were looking, I even thought they were before the Planning Commission, so looking at how to build 6 or 7 homes over the next 5 or 6 years. Without a map, I will object to this until I'm sure that lot 2 is not the same lot that we assigned to the university and school district.
We'll get that clarified. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. To answer Mr. Jones' question, this is confusing because I always think the one numbered lot 2 ought to be lot 1. But lot 2 is on the uphill corner of Jackie Street and Renninger Street. Lot 3 is 1 to the east, and that is the lot that the city is selling to the high school home build project. So lot 2 is not the same as the high school home build lot, and this would not interfere in any way I can see with that sale.
Well, I guess I have to pick who I'm going to trust. So I'll remove my objection, and I hope you're not wrong.
Okay, so he doesn't trust the city
manager. Okay. Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. If it helps at all, Mr. Jones, my recollection also was that it was lot 3 and that they are numbered a little odd, and lot 2 is the one at the corner of the intersection, as Mr. Keel has described.
So you not so now you
thank
have
you.
Two
I have
people
three
to,
yeah. We wanted somebody to trust.
Did you remove your objection?
Mm-hmm. I did reluctantly, but I did.
All right. Any other objections? Seeing none, motion carried. Madam Clerk.
Item D is protest recommendation for liquor license renewal 2175 Midnight Ninja Ventures Incorporated, DBA Lupo.
Mr. Manager.
Staff from Finance, Fire, Police, Engineering, Public Works, and Community Development Departments have reviewed the above liquor license renewal. Fire Department is recommending a protest of the renewal based on a balance owing as of May 5th, 2017 of $40,362.28 due to outstanding sales tax, liquor tax penalties, and interest from the fourth quarter 2016 and first quarter 2017 returns. Normally, license recommended for protest would be heard initially by the Assembly Human Resources Committee. However, the May 15th HRC meeting was canceled, and the 60-day comment period for Assembly action on this license will expire as of May 27, 2017. So this is coming to the Assembly directly for action. CBJ 2025-025 provides the business the right to an informal hearing before the Assembly if they choose to do so, and this would be that opportunity should they choose to request an informal hearing. A copy of the letter dated May 5, 2017, notifying the licensee of their right to a hearing before the Assembly is included in your packet. I recommend you protest the renewal of the liquor license number 2175 due to the outstanding balances owing as outlined in the May 5th, 2017 letter contained in your packet.
Is there someone here to speak to Midnight Ninja Ventures, Inc.? Mr. Bartholomew, why don't you just save us time and come up here? If you could give your name and address, please.
My name is Travis Smith, and my address is 822 Basin Road. Juneau, Alaska. I have a short letter, and then maybe if you guys have questions, we can go from there. Ladies and gentlemen of the Assembly, thank you for your time. I'm here because of the lax in payments of sales tax to the CBJ for my businesses. There's no easy or quick explanation for why we were unable to give payments when they were due. It simply comes from not having the cash on hand at the time. We made business decisions in 2015 that cascaded over the course of that fall with a delayed and much more expensive than planned on remodel of a new restaurant. Subsequently, we saw lower than projected sales throughout the year of 2016 as a result of what I think we are calling a recession. Is that officially what the state of Alaska has named it now? We have a recession. And from there into the fall, we lost some key staff and a bunch of equipment failed. And really, when it came down to it, I had to make a decision at the end of January as to whether or not I paid my staff or I paid you guys sales tax on one payroll. So that leads us to where we are now with some outstanding tax debt. And the reality that if we are unable to continue operating with a beer and wine license at our restaurant, that it will completely preclude the ability for us to pay said sales tax. I have met with Clinton Singletary, and we have a payment plan in place, and we have made a payment last week, and we should be able to, by the end of this summer, have knocked away, I'm hoping, over half the balance on this while staying current with our current sales tax obligations. Yeah, I ask for lenience in this matter so that we can continue to employ the 50 employees that I have and feed y'all.
Clarification.
That's all I have.
Mr. Smith. Done. Mr. Gregory.
So, Mr. Smith, are you familiar that this money that you get in sales tax is not your money to operate with, that it's passed through to the city government?
I'm well aware of that, yeah.
Mr. Kale?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Smith, or for staff, you used the term payment plan. Is that a confession of judgment, which is the term the finance department usually uses?
That's correct.
And I guess I would just, if I could just speak to that. Question for Mr. Smith would be, unless it was signed today, there may be a payment plan that I'm not familiar with, but in an email I got from Mr. Singletary today said he's definitely been working with Mr. Smith. They've been meeting along with our collection staff, and that they are close to having an official confession of a judgment signed. He didn't expect that it would get signed by the end of today.
Yeah, it has not been signed.
Right. Okay. And that, but that they do expect it to get signed as soon as all the signatories are available.
Two of my business partners and shareholders do not live in the state, and there was a missed email where I was unaware that they needed to also have this thing signed.
So the initial terms would be $1,200 a month. And that would take several years to pay off the taxes. Mr. Smith indicated to Mr. Singletary that the goal would be to do it sooner, but to make sure that they don't take on too much, that's why they're negotiating the length of time. And taking this approach would be consistent with two other decisions that have happened in the last several years with the Assembly and working with the sales tax on it's just a really difficult public policy issue about the sales tax collection and the demand of making that payment and the renewal of the liquor license versus the reality of trying to get that sales tax paid and keeping the businesses operating. And it's we try to err definitely in protecting the city and the sales tax. But I think the confession of judgment that's been negotiated and that the intent is to sign would meet what we have done in the past several years. And then if there's a non-compliance with the confession of judgment, then we would, we would be back to the situation and at probably at the midterm renewal.
Ms. Brzezinski and then Ms. Weldon.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would be inclined to waive the protest. We have until May 27th, so my concern is that it actually hasn't been signed and it hasn't been for sure done. But do we have any meeting between now and May 27th that we could, you know, take this up again? Is that the deal? We don't have, in case it doesn't get signed and an agreement doesn't come. I mean, I assume the agreement is going to come, but it's not signed.
Mr. Mayor, looking at the calendar, there is a committee of the whole next Monday, the 22nd.
Okay. So as long as it's signed before then, or if it's not signed before then, we can do this on the 22nd, right?
Are you asking?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it would really, I think, be up to the committee chair if they wanted to have that on the agenda as a, well, or what we've done in the past is there's a contingency that the assembly would protest the renewal of the liquor license conditioned upon if there's an assignment of an agreement, you know, before the May 27th date, then we would withdraw our protest. So there would be one condition on the protest, and if that condition was met, then the clerk's office would coordinate with the ABC board and withdraw that.
I would make that motion to protest unless a confession of judgment is signed by some date. Give me a date. You don't want it to be the 27th because that'd be too late, but.
I think we could say the 24th.
By the 24th.
I don't know what day of the week that is.
Wednesday, the 24th.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a motion before you for your discussion. Is there discussion? Ms. Weldon, I didn't mean to cut you off. Do you wish to address this?
I was just going to ask a question.
Please.
So other than the liquor license, does this business have any other assets?
Sadly, as far as the banks are concerned, no. They won't loan money on restaurant equipment. I've been trying for over 8 months now to get more money. We saw this coming pretty much getting into the fall. They're just not apt to loan much money out right now because the resale value of restaurant equipment is very low. No, we don't have assets. Other than liquor licenses, which they also won't loan money on, even though they're worth a considerable amount of money if you were to go and sell one. To that extent, no. I mean, if I had assets that were of a high enough value, we would have been able to borrow against them already.
Okay. Further discussion? I have a motion before you. Does everyone understand the motion?
Could you clarify for me? Is it to protest the license unless the confession of judgment is signed by May 22nd?
24th.
May 20th, Wednesday, May 24th.
Thank you.
Is there objection to the motion? Seeing none, motion is carried.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Okay, someplace in here we're going to be going, or I'm going to be going, on Project Playground. It will be soon. Started at 7. Mm-hmm. What?
Yes. Oh.
So, staff reports.
I have none.
Assembly reports. Does anybody have any assembly reports that can't wait?
I'll be really fast.
I do, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Jones?
Thank you. This is one related to the airport, and I know the manager is aware of it. He has the documents, but basically the state collects an aviation fuel tax that is collected from all of the airports, and it goes into the state coffers. According to the letter from Commissioner Lucan, 40% is utilized by the Department of Transportation, and and public facilities for capital maintenance and improvements of state rural airport system. The state retained amount has been approximately $55,000 per year for Juneau International Airport over the last several years. Previously, the DOT had given Airport Improvement Program matching share program that constituted about $1 million. They have stopped that recently, and the airport inquired as to whether or not DOT would support the return of all of the retained monies, the $55,000 per year, back to the airports. And the letter dated April 10th to the manager of the airport from the commissioner said that they would support that, but it would require legislative change. And I know it's late in the season, but I was asked to bring it to the attention so that if the assembly didn't object, I would like the manager and you to work with the lobbyists to figure out a strategy either for the end of session, if there's still some time, or if not, in the next session, to see what it would take to change the statute so that those fuel taxes collected at our airport get returned to our airport since they are no longer putting out the match money for the FAA projects.
Does anybody have any objection for the manager working on that? Nope. All right.
Thank you. That's all I can't wait.
Okay, Ms. White.
Yes, I just wanted to pass on possession of a paddle and a couple other things I received in, when I covered for you at the totem pole raising over at Gastineau School. And so I just wanted to be able to give it all to you so I'm not in charge of it, and we can talk about it another day.
All right. Well, beautiful paddle. Thank you for doing that.
You're welcome. I just didn't want to be responsible for it anymore.
Okay, any other liaison committee reports, presiding officer reports, or assembly comments and questions? Mr. Keel.
No finance committee this Wednesday.
Just a quick question. All the bushes were completely cut down between the bridge and the subport in the last couple days. What happened there, and who made that happen?
Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, I don't see Mr. Uchtel in the room anymore, but those are tidelands managed by Docks and Harbors. So I believe that was a Docks and Harbors activity.
I would love to hear about that. I mean, there was no, they just didn't leave anything. They just cut all of it down.
Wasn't DOT brushing the right away?
That's what I mean. Who was it? I think it was Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor?
Harbors.
Docks and Harbors. Okay. A contractor working for Docks and Harbors.
Okay. Mr. Nankervis?
Mr. Mayor, Mr. Jones was ahead of me, I believe.
Mr. Jones?
I'm trying to picture what Ms. Klaszewski said, but I know that DOT and their preparation for Egan between Gold Creek and the subport and the subsequent way they're going to widen the sidewalk and add bike lanes, they have to take more right-of-way toward the water. And it could very well be that they were doing some prep work. I don't know if that's true, but at this particular time, but I think that was certainly in their plans.
Mr. Jones, the manager is believes it's Docks and Harbors.
All right. Assembly, any more assembly comments and questions? Committee and liaison reports? Seeing none, is there anyone speaking on the continuation of public participation on non-agenda items? Is it on the pedicabs or is it on something else? If it's on the pedicabs, you're already spoken. Well, then, if it's not on the pedicabs, then you're welcome to address us. If it's on the pedicabs, then that was on the agenda item. Okay. We'll get that another day then. Executive session. Are we going to have an executive session?
Mr. Mayor, Mr. Ned Curvis, I believe, has a proposal.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
If I may, I would propose, since I believe we all want to get to the project playground thing tonight, the amount of time that it's going to take to do our executive session and that our attorney is home dealing with a medical emergency this evening, I would move that we have a special assembly meeting Wednesday night, which should give us time for public notice, Wednesday, May 17th, for the sole purpose of entering into executive session to discuss the CLIA litigation. We don't have assembly. We don't have finance committee, I know, and I looked at Mr. Keel when I say that, but we are under a time constraint to get this done, and we either stay here really late tonight and none of us get to that project playground thing like we all were hoping to do, or most of us were hoping to do, and we don't have the benefit of having the attorney sitting in the room with us. So that's what I would move.
Noon? Did you say noon?
For time. The time on Wednesday, 5
Mr.
o'clock.
Oh.
Sorry.
Mr. Mayor, the odds that I will be able to attend in anything on the 121st day are extremely slim. So there's no sense having it tonight without the attorney. I would hope that we could move it to
Thursday,
Friday, Saturday, some other day, if possible.
About Thursday at noon? Is that a possibility for people?
I have a broker's meeting. Thursday is just crazy for me.
Mr. Nan Curvis?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And then I would have a question for our manager. I am skeptical we could do this in an hour, but Mr. Manager, please weigh in on that.
Mr. Deputy Mayor, it's a complicated topic, and an hour on this topic, I think, is the shortest possible, and I think it would feel short. I believe Ms. Mead is available by phone tonight, if that's a desirable option. And other than that, we don't have any staff constraints.
Further discussion? Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mayor Kelsch. I would prefer to have the executive session tonight as scheduled.
Anyone else?
I'm just
Mr. Mayor.
Putting out different times. I mean, I could do longer than an hour at noon. I'm just trying to find a time when we can all do it. I completely get Mr. Keel not going to any meeting on Wednesday.
I'd have
so
to wait.
Thursday or Friday?
No, I'm not going to be at the city hall on my birthday.
Absolutely.
Yes. Do we have anybody? We have Mr. Gregory for tonight. Ms. Weldon?
I go tonight. It doesn't look like we can find another date.
Ms. White?
If we don't do it tonight, I can't do anything until Friday.
Ms. Radishevsky?
I could do it Friday. I could do it tonight.
I think the 17th was when the time runs out, if I'm not mistaken.
Mr. Mayor, I believe the stay expires. The date I have is the 21st, so I believe 8 a.m. Monday the 22nd. This day is no longer in effect.
Okay. Well, I'm mistaken. So we do have the 22nd. 20. Let's start with there.
What's Friday?
19th.
No.
Friday's the 19th.
Friday the 19th.
Okay, 19th at noon.
That's the ribbon cutting ceremony at Satter Harbor.
Okay.
Then make it 1 o'clock or 10 or 11.
Probably you'd have to make it 2.
2.
I can do 2.
2 o'clock on Friday?
Yep, I can do that.
Mr. Dan Curvis.
I'll withdraw my motion.
2 o'clock on Friday?
Yep.
Not that one. It's Southeast track meet.
2 o'clock on Friday.
7 a.m.
2:45.
Well, I'm missing.
7 a.m. on Friday.
Oh.
Okay.
What?
7 a.m.?
How about 10 a.m.? How about 10 a.m. on Friday? Stater Harbor's at noon.
That's pushing it to get out the road if we have it here.
I would do 8 or 9, but not 7.
8 a.m. on Friday?
9 a.m. on Friday.
What?
9 a.m. on Friday.
All right.
8:30?
That, you know, it's okay. Let's just find a time.
9 a.m.? Is that okay?
9 a.m. Friday.
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
I can do 9 a.m. I can do 7 a.m.
Right. 9 a.m. Friday. Is Ms. Becker still on there?
I am. I won't be home yet. I'll just have to see how it goes. I'll call in if I can.
All right. So 9 a.m. Friday for the executive session.
Okay.
Okay, seeing nothing further, get well, Ms. Becker.
Thank you.
We are adjourned.